From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the ninth day of December 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural commodity markets. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois, will be here. Along the way, we'll hear from the Farm Bureau in a commentary about the upcoming 2012 Farm Bill debate. And Pete Levitt will bring us the agricultural weather forecast. It's also time for another look at In My Backyard with Lisa Braltz. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media at the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The December contract and the soft red winter wheat up 6.25 cents at $7.48 and a quarter. The March at $7.88 and a half, up 4 and a half. In the May at $8.14, 5 and a half higher. July wheat $8.14 as well, up 7 and 3 quarters. Hard red nearby contract in the hard red futures at 8.34 and a quarter, up 7 cents. That for the December futures. December corn futures now back in Chicago, a 5.60 and a quarter settlement price, up 3 quarters. The March at 5.74 and a quarter, down 1 quarter. May unchanged at 5.83. July at 5.87 and a quarter, unchanged. And December futures at 5.29 and three quarters in the corn pit, down 4 cents. January beans at 12.81 and a half, 14 and a half cents lower. March at 12.90 and a half, down 14 and a half. The May down 15 at $12.94. And July soybeans 12.94 and three quarters, down 15 and three quarters. November contract at $11.98 and three quarters, down 13 and three quarters. December bean meal at $3.39.90, down 5.50. December soybean oil 53.79. That's a penny lower on the afternoon. December live cattle futures at $101.80, down 30 cents. The January feeders at $118.75, a dime lower for the day. The March there at $118.42 and a half, down 40 cents. And December lean hog futures $69.42 and a half ahead, finished 62 and a half cents lower on the afternoon for that 100 pounds. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, January contract, $88.42 a barrel, up 14 cents. Ethanol at $2.08 and a half. That's 0.9 cents higher. Natural gas at $4.43 and 8 cents, down 16 and 8 cents. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.47 even, just about 0.9 cents higher. Gold futures trading at $1,392 as they finish the day, and 10 cents were up $9.60. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at just about 28 points lower, 11,344. The U.S. dollar at 80.07 is up 0.07. The CRB index at 316.09 is down 0.78 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. They say cloudy skies, a high near 30 degrees. South winds around 16 miles an hour, gusting as high as 20. Tonight, a 30% chance of snow before midnight. Cloudy, then gradually becoming partly cloudy, with a low around 26 degrees this evening. South-southwest winds between 11 and 16. They'll gust all the way to 20. And tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high near 36 degrees. West-southwest winds between 7 and 11, gusting to 15. Friday night, mostly clear, rather mostly cloudy, a low of 27. South-southwest winds about 7 miles an hour. And Saturday, rain likely, mainly afternoon. Cloudy, a high near 39 degrees on Saturday. South winds around 6 miles an hour. They'll become east-northeast with a chance of precip at 60% or better. Saturday night, snow likely. Cloudy, blustery, a low of 23, a chance of precip is 70% Saturday night. Sunday, a 40% chance of snow, mostly cloudy and blustery, a high just 25 degrees. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Rob O'Malley in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. It's a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker is in Decatur, Illinois at ADM Grain Group. He joins us now to take a look at the commodity futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Tomorrow morning, USDA comes out with another report. Usually December is dismissed by most of the trade. They do contain the world agricultural supply and demand estimates, and this one seems to have more interest than most. Why is that?
Well, I think it has interest, most interest, because we do have tight world supplies. I mean, there's no getting around it that we don't have much room for error over the next 12 months in any kind of production spots, and we do have certain particular areas that are showing problems, whether it's too much rain in Australia and Indonesia, to dry weather in Argentina, to dry weather in the southwest winter wheat area, as well as China wheat areas and a lot of dryness across Europe. So every supply-demand balance sheet's going to be kind of gone through with a fine-tooth comb to see if USDA is going to move any numbers. I don't look for them to do anything big, but I do think that there's reason to believe, at least I think the comfort level on bringing down the ending stocks level on soybeans, I think is almost a sure deal. Given the demand that we have seen for soybeans and soybean products. So I do think that one's pretty well a given, but they didn't do much to hold the soybean market up today. Corn, the general idea is that corn demand is going to be raised and maybe ending stocks could come down a little bit. A little bit don't make no difference. I mean, the main report is coming at us in January, and that's going to be the market maker, I think, for the next 3 months.
And are any of the grains in a position where they have wiggle room at all, and the oil seeds, so soybeans, wheat, or corn?
Not really. I mean, there's wheat. A lot of the wheat inventory now is turning into feed wheat. So that maybe cushions some of the supply tightness that we see in the feed grain market. I would think that maybe that's one of the reasons why the corn export demand hasn't been as strong as what we were thinking maybe 30 days ago or 60 days ago. And that's going to be an issue for us, I think, as we go forward. But there's not much wiggle room on anything. And, for the most part, the trade is still feeling that there's going to be some kind of blow up in prices, whether it's going to be, you know, late winter, early spring, or maybe late spring, early summer. But something that comes along, it won't take much to kind of light a fire underneath the market.
Are you capable, from your vantage point there in Indicator of seeing the wheat move into the feed supply side of the marketplace on the planet somewhere?
I mean, well, I don't work that side of the market, but you could probably see that in demand interest for corn because we do the these countries with this poor quality wheat is going to start pumping that into the world market. So that's going to be quite obvious. Like I said, I don't work the export market, so I don't see that on a day-to-day basis. But I do think that that's where you're going to see it. And wheat has always been hard for us to be competitive. I mean us, the U.S. It's just all other countries have been willing to undercut us on price. But I think now maybe with the a lot of quality problems, maybe the interest level in U.S. inventory is going to pick up a lot because we do have good quality of wheat. We got a lot of it around here in the United States, and we do have a lot of good quality wheat to be marketed export-wise.
On the daily, the weekly, or the monthly chart, what kinds of things are you watching of most interest in corn?
Well, I'm still watching the monthly down in corn. It wasn't a key reversal outside monthly down, but it was a monthly down off of the yearly high. So far, we've stayed inside that November price range. It's kind of my opinion that we could do that, but I also know that it wouldn't take much to fluff up this market fairly quickly. Short run, I think the market needs to kind of show some strong follow-through from yesterday's reversal up. We tried to do it a little bit today, but then we kind of fell to the back or came back to unchanged here at the close. I think if we put in a good session to the upside tomorrow, I think that would favor then a run up into late next week, and then we'd probably begin to talk about holiday trade from that point forward.
Yeah, so for those of you who are looking at the charts, the reversal up yesterday is sort of the same as the reversal down on the monthly charts, except it's the switch side, so you've got a lower low and a higher close from the day before.
Right.
And on the month, you've got a higher high and a lower close on the monthly, so those are kind of a couple of little things to watch. The monthly chart, I suppose, is more important at this point than the daily, for sure.
Well, yeah. The key about the monthly down, it didn't have any follow-through. We snapped back real hard on the first day of December, so we've got an inside month going. So what that does from a technical point of view, or at least the way I would view it, that if we hold within the January range here over the next 3 weeks, then we lay the groundwork for the big move to happen in January, and the rule of thumb will be to go with the direction of the breakout of the December range. So if January prices start going above the December high, your technical bulls will be in charge. If it goes underneath the December low, then your bears are going to be in charge. So that pretty well is probably going to depend upon how the trade views the January report.
How about on the soy complex?
Soybean complex, on a daily basis, you'd have to say today's decline's a little disappointing because it didn't even show a steady close on a reversal up to the upside. But I still think you got tomorrow to see whether or not yesterday's reversal can punch on up through the most recent high point here, which is basically 1306 or 1307 on January beans. If we punch above that, I would say beans then would technically be in probably the best shape to go on up against that November high point of 1348 on the January contract.
What are you telling producers when they call in and they say, well, what do I do for the next month? Do I need to let it go? I could if I want to before the December month is up.
Well, I don't like to give advice in December because December's been like what we've seen this past week. But if I was going to give advice, I guess I would, and if they were needing to be looking at doing some selling, I think they got a week in here to kind of capture some price strength. I would like to see how the market performs tomorrow before I give up the ship, because I kind of think there's a decent shot that this market might try to rally into late next week. And if it does, then I would probably reward that market with some sales and then get interested in Christmas, I guess.
How about the wheat contracts? Can you take a look at that very quickly for me?
Wheat is a hard one. But it's pretty much in the same. If I look at Chicago wheat here, let me get Chicago. Chicago March.
It's got a double top there.
Huh?
Does it have a double top there set
well,
in front of us on the day?
Well, you could maybe view that as somewhat of a double top. We had an $8 high there in late October, I think, or early November, and then we had this 8.11 high here a couple days ago. I would say that you could use this reversal down that we had there on, was it Tuesday? Yeah, it'd be Tuesday. And then the reversal up yesterday, if you kind of take the midpoint of that point, and if we start breaking above 8.11, I think that would open up the gates then for a move toward the upper end of that channel, which could take you above the $9 area.
Dan, thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says it's time to plan for the 2012 Farm Bill.
There will be many important legislative issues relevant to agriculture in the new Congress. One of the most significant is the 2012 Farm Bill, which will create much debate on the delegate floor of the 96th Annual Illinois Farm Bureau meeting next week. Illinois Farm Bureau jump-started thinking on the 2012 Farm Bill by launching a 36-member Farm Policy Task Force. The task force was charged with developing agriculture policy concepts for delegates to debate as policy for the future. The 2012 Farm Bill will be written by a new Congressional Agriculture Committee who may not be familiar with farm policy. There are many diverse interests seeking a piece of the 2012 Farm Bill pie. The biggest issue affecting the consideration of the new Farm Bill will be budget issues, particularly agriculture spending related to farm programs. Farm programs have always been a target and will be an even greater one in today's economic environment. Regardless, Farm Bureau will work with Agriculture Committee members to help them understand the role of farm programs and develop a Farm Bill that provides an effective and responsive safety net for producers across the country. Farmers understand the need to foster economic growth and job creation. Farm Bureau will work closely with congressional members on tax issues, such as the estate tax and capital gains tax, as well as for common sense solutions on environmental issues like the Clean Water Act and greenhouse gas regulations. Renewable fuels will also likely face challenges. It may be difficult for the industry to get anything but short-term extensions on tax credits and incentives. New congressional members know very little about economics, production practices, and environmental regulations related to agriculture. But, as with any new Congress, Farm Bureau is looking forward to working with its new members to help them better understand agriculture, our nation's most vital industry. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-9697 or email at willagstaff@illinois.edu.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring locally grown and organic foods as well as homemade healthy deli meals. More information is available at 352-3347 or at the co-op.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, Midwest locavores may not be able to find locally produced raw ingredients to sate a holiday sweet tooth. But Lisa Brotz says that isn't stopping them from hitting the kitchen in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
I'm grateful for last week's snowstorm. I happen to be overly tuned in to seasonal weather anyway, so to me, snow appearing right as the holiday season is ramping up is a good thing. When one has lived most of one's life in the upper Midwest, one can be a bit flummoxed by 60-degree snowless weather in December, so things are looking good out there this year. Whatever wasn't cleaned up in the garden, which was almost everything, is now covered in several inches of snow and looks pretty. This includes the rainbow chard, which was the last edible green thing I had going back there. Local food from the backyard or from someone else who grows it is not as bounteous in our area this time of year, at least not in the showy way produce is during the traditional growing season. But it's still there, quietly provisional, not making a big, obvious deal about itself. We're lucky enough around these parts to have producers still offering locally grown root vegetables and locally raised meats, cheeses, and eggs through a variety of outlets. So this means your holiday meals can have a major local component. Not so much the holiday baking, though. The major ingredients that go into our beloved cookies, cakes, and other sweets, the flours, the sugars, the dried fruits, the chocolate, don't grow here, or if they do, they're not easy to find or they're not available in the massive quantities we need to feed our holiday appetites. But this is okay. Even though we can't necessarily provide locally sourced sweet things for the holidays, we can certainly provide them locally made. like from our own kitchens, in season. Over the weekend, I visited with my neighbors Kate and Ben, who were whipping up a bunch of amazing food for their friends and business patrons. Ben mused a little bit on what handmade means to his family at the holidays while dipping coconut bars into melted chocolate.
It's hard to get coconut, almonds, chocolate produced right around here. But I think doing things by hand rather than just buying a bag goes a long way anyhow. Not only the sort of do-it-yourself aspect, but the doing it together as a family aspect is nice. And knowing that you put some time into to making something worthwhile is something I think that the holiday season is kind of all about. And as we're teaching our children about the season, we're really trying to emphasize that it's a great time of year to think about our family and to think about others and to make things for them. And that's really sort of the idea of the season.
So, handmade holiday food is part of tradition and part of giving. And in many circles, my own family included, it's a part of holiday expectations. A traditional handmade food can make an event, can make an evening, can even make a holiday. It's also something you can make with someone else, and you don't necessarily have to be super accomplished in the kitchen to be successful. Our family's major, major winter holiday favorite isn't a cookie. It's cinnamon rolls from scratch. We all love them and wait for them every December in the same way we wait for asparagus and strawberries in the spring and peaches, corn, and tomatoes in the summer. I love making these with my daughter, Lily. I don't remember helping out much in the kitchen as a young person, but Lily's been at my elbow for years, and now, at 12, she's able to make them herself, from making the dough to shaping. This is a great thing for many reasons, not the least of which is because I commit to making many, many batches of these for friends and family every year, and I can use the help. Here's why I do it. You see, these cinnamon rolls were Christmas morning food in my childhood home. It dawned on me in adulthood that my mother made these rolls ahead of time and froze them not just because she loved us, but also so she could pop them in a slow oven for 45 minutes at the crack of dawn when my brother and I woke up, and could then relax and enjoy the morning with her family rather than be in the kitchen making a bunch of food while it was still dark outside. By gifting these rolls, I'm not just bringing the gift of awesome food to my friends and family. I'm also buying them a couple of hours of freedom on a groggy holiday morning. I also post a cinnamon roll recipe on my blog every year for my readers, all 17 of them, as a reminder to get into the kitchen so they can stay out of the kitchen, if you know what I mean. Perhaps you'll consider doing the same.
Can I eat one?
You will be able to eat one.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Lisa Broth's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In just 2 minutes, I'll return and we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
It's National Pastry Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1868, Fritz Haber was born, a German physical chemist. He won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1918 for developing a method of synthesizing ammonia directly from nitrogen and hydrogen. His process led to the commercial large-scale production of nitrogen fertilizer. In 1886, Clarence Birdseye was born. Birdseye was inventor of the deep freezing food method and co-founder of General Foods Corporation. On Arctic trips as a field naturalist for the U.S. government, he noticed that freshly caught fish, when placed onto the Arctic ice and exposed to the icy wind and frigid temperatures, froze solid almost immediately. He also learned that the fish, when thawed and eaten, still had all its fresh characteristics. He concluded that quickly freezing certain items kept large crystals from forming, preventing damage to their cellular structure. In 1935, Lafayette Benedict Mendel died. An American biochemist, he published many papers on nutrition. His work on vitamins and proteins helped establish modern standards of nutrition. And in 1997, Carl August Fulkers died. He was the first to isolate vitamin B12. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Pete Levitt is here now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It looks like it's going to be cold and warm, warmer, that is, and wet, and then really cold. What do you see?
Oh, yes, we have a little mixture of everything. Of course, it's starting out cold today. It'll moderate tomorrow, and Saturday is low pressure system and a front approaches from the west and brings some milder air in ahead of it. And then the front goes by and we get an Arctic blast coming down from the upper Midwest right through the Midwest on Sunday. Sunday temperatures will get down, won't get out of the teens, I don't believe, on Sunday. On Monday, we'll probably see temperatures in the low single numbers, morning temperatures around zero, and getting stuck in the teens again during the day. A really cold day on Monday, and then the temperatures will start to recover slowly Tuesday, Wednesday, and by the end of the week, we'll probably see temperatures just edging a little bit above normal, so it's quite a ride. As far as precipitation is concerned, we've got a few showers up front with the first system as it goes by, and then this storm coming with the really strong cold front Saturday night and Sunday will throw precipitation across the upper Midwest and the Great Lakes. And I think the area of precipitation will dip down to cover the northern third of Illinois, and it will be mostly snow. So we'll see a snowy, windy day on Sunday in the Chicago area and down, probably down just to the north of I-70. South of that, I think it's just going to be some wind and cold. And that's the kind of weather my team, which is coming to town, the Boston Patriots, on Sunday will be playing the Bears there. It's got to be pretty frigid and windy. I don't think that favors a passing team like the Patriots, but we'll see.
I guess we will. Let's turn your attention to warmer climates. What do you see in South America?
In South America, we've had more rain in Brazil, which is good because they are hungry for rain this time of year with a developing summer crops getting in the ground and up, and I think the prospects for most of Brazil look pretty good. The problem area has been the Argentine. They've been very dry. They did get some beneficial rain this past week, but it didn't cover most of the agricultural belt, and now they're dry again, and they're going to be on the warm side, and I think we've had a problem there with some late planting and forcing perhaps the need to abandon a second crop this season in those areas in the northern Argentine where they like to get in two crops if they can. So the weather prospects there aren't too good.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. Thanks for being along. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.